our own White House correspondent John Decker, talking about some of these civil cases and gag orders. Good line by Trump I just saw on CNN. Trump on the judges, quote, "They can talk about me, but I can't talk about them?" Question mark. John Decker, our own White House correspondent. Civil fraud bond payment, I guess, being secured. A lot of other stuff going on, John. Good morning. And, of course, classified documents still pending.
Well, first of all, let me correct the record. Donald Trump can talk about any judge he wishes. None of those limited gag orders apply to the judges presiding over his case. So he's incorrect in terms of what he put out there on social media. As it relates to the civil fraud case, so many cases to keep track of here, Jack. But as it relates to the civil fraud case, he has made that payment of $175 million for the bond that was necessary in order for him to pursue an appeal of that judgment against him in that particular civil fraud matter. So that will take some time for the appeal to be heard. And ultimately, if Donald Trump loses, he'd be on the hook for $454 million. That's how much the civil fraud judgment is at this point. As you know, interest accrues every day concerning that judgment.
It's mind-boggling stuff. I mean, it's just you can't. If you had sort of stepped away and went away from Earth for a few years and came back to the United States and you look at this political cycle, just a lot of this stuff you couldn't make up.
You're right. You couldn't make it up. That's right. But this is what Donald Trump will be contending with. In fact, in less than 2 weeks' time, 4 out of 5 of the work days per week, Donald Trump will be in a courtroom. That's when that criminal matter gets underway in Manhattan. That has to do with those hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. That case expected to last anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. So we will likely get a verdict in that particular criminal trial before the Republican National Convention in mid-July.
Our own White House correspondent John Decker on a Tuesday. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Jack.
Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online. She is going to Arkansas, not to get married. She's already married to or Texas to check out this eclipse on Monday, right?
No, but we are going to the Great North Woods to do it. We decided we had to convince my sister-in-law to let us take her son out of school in Massachusetts for the day, that this is going to be an epic thing and why not be part of it. And so we are doing that. And I can't wait. It should be fun. We're not going to Arkansas, but we are going to the North Country.
Why do I think this is going to be a tad anticlimactic? Not that it's not going to happen, but, I mean, people are getting a little bit exercised. Do you think it's just an escape mechanism, something, I'm not saying you, something for people to say, you know what, this is what I'm focused on because I don't want to focus on all the other crap?
I think it's a lot of things. You know, I think life can get a little mundane. We're all really busy. We work. We have families. We've got life stuff to do. My to-do list today for stuff that has nothing to do with work is really long, and we all have an excuse, those of us who are able to say we're going to pause real world on Monday, and we're all going to get together and we're going to go see something different and do something different. And I think it's a great breakaway from the normalcies of life because it doesn't happen very often, so why not?
All right, what else is what's catching your eye? Seacoast Online, Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos. As we get going, we got a little bit of a nor'easter coming your way tomorrow.
We do. I think down here on the coast, the snow levels are going to be pretty mild, but certainly there'll be some wind. There could be some flooding. You know, there are parts of the state that are going to get, they say, a foot, foot and a half in April. The only upside to that is it's going to melt, hopefully, pretty quickly. I mean, that causes flooding issues, too. But, you know, I think we thought we got out of a pretty easy winter for many of us, and here we go. But I'll stock up on bread and milk and see what happens.
All right, 2nd Congressional District, Ann Custer had it last week, of course, not running again, opens it up. Several, more than a few Democrat names being bantered about, Colin Van Ostern, Andrew Walensky, and others, and Republicans, more than a few names. What about Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos? Are you going to jump into that race?
Well, I know you don't have to live in the 2nd District, but I think you should, and I live in the 1st. But even if it were 1st District, the answer is no. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting race. That's a tough district for Republicans. And in the presidential year, it really will come down to who comes out for the presidential race will be a very big part of if a Republican can win that district. There are certainly several names being floated around from the Republican side of the ticket, and several of them are really good you know, would be really good candidates. So I think we got to wait. It'll be, they've got till June to file, so we've got time to figure out how it's going to shake out. But, you know, if we put together a really solid Republican on the ticket, anything goes in the presidential year.
It's hard to read. I got this from one of our great contributors, Matthew Bartlett, with Darby Field Advisors in D.C. yesterday. I just want to share it with you. Because I'm looking, part of my question is, if you look at how successful Ann Custer was in that second district, I think she pretty much had, you know, one reelection since the last Republican was Charlie Bass back in 2012. Regardless of who runs and is the nominee, can a Republican win that district, Alicia?
I think it's really tough. I mean, it's, you know, since Charlie Bass was congressman, the district has changed. And I think it's really hard for a Republican to win with the numbers that are there. But again, you know, there's so many unknowns in a presidential year, not just a presidential year, a unique presidential year with Donald Trump and Joe Biden at the top of the ticket, which is the ticket most people didn't want. And it'll come down to who's going to turn out. And the turnout is going to be everything. So I agree with Matthew. Hi, Matthew. He's great. But it's tough. It's a tough district for a Republican. But I wouldn't write it off yet. I think, you know, if we put up a good candidate, it's all going to be about the race and the turnout and, you know, convincing the other side. Maybe people will say, all right, look, we're going to have Joe Biden as president again, but we want a check and balance. We want to, you know, have a Congress
on that note,
I don't know.
What's different this time, Alicia, is we have presidential stuff this fall, but we have an open governor's race. We haven't seen that in 8 years here, pretty much, because Sununu's been on that gubernatorial bout. So we have a wide open gubernatorial race. We don't have a big U.S. Senate race. The seat that Shaheen is now, you know, occupying is not up till 2026. But we have presidential, gubernatorial. So I think there's going to be a very energized, active voter base. How about this one? No one's really talking about this, but I'm still fascinated just because I've seen what Green Party candidates, Ross Perot in the past, so I have too much history in my head. And I don't try and edit the history, by the way. RFK Jr. put out this yesterday. This is off interactivepolls.com or whatever. His campaign saying that he's qualified for the ballot in North Carolina. That means he's now successfully going to be on the presidential ballot in North Carolina, Nevada, Utah, Hawaii, and guess what other state?
Well, I was listening to you a few minutes ago, so I know the answer. New Hampshire.
And I just looking at this state, Alicia, and I'm telling you, the biggest block of voters is not Republican or Democrat. It's independents. And I don't think they're doing the happy dance on the choices. I'm not saying Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Someone heard me this recently. They said, are you like a fan? Are you no, I said, I'm looking at reality. I think he's got a 1 or 2 or 0% chance of winning this thing. But he could play a spoiler role by without question.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And if you remember a few weeks ago, you and I were talking when President Biden visited here in New Hampshire. We said, do they know something we don't know? Because, you know, Trump has never won New Hampshire. What are they worried about? Maybe this is what they knew was coming. Maybe that, you know, unknown of how many votes can Kennedy take from Democrats in New Hampshire. Maybe that's what they were looking at. You know, I'm not a fan of RFK for a million reasons. He also came out. He's kind of building the case that he's doing what people thought he was, which is deliberately being a spoiler. He came out, I think it was yesterday, I just saw it this morning, and said Joe Biden's a greater threat to democracy than Donald Trump. Now, whether that's true or not, this is a lifelong Democrat who's now an independent saying this, and it kind of builds the case of he's trying to be the spoiler deliberately.
Doesn't matter, right? Spoil.
No.
All right. Any other final APX tidbits?
No, I got nothing. I'm just going to put on my galoshes tomorrow and go with it. I'll see you in the North Country on Monday.
Hey, only because I know you, can I suggest to you, do you like Netflix documentaries?
Yes, I love them.
I watched one last night after another movie, which was more what you'd expect from me, which I won't get into. It was actually...
A cartoon, I presume.
What's that?
A cartoon, I presume.
The what you presume?
Cartoon that I'd expect you to watch.
No. It's Good Guys... No, it was Good Guys Taking Out Bad Guys.
I love those.
There's a great documentary on Katharine Hepburn, the actress, and her life. I think it might be called Kate, but Katharine Hepburn. What a story. I mean, I knew a lot of it because I've always been kind of a fan. Golden Pond, where I think she almost played her. What a great movie because she almost played herself in real life, and Henry Fonda and his daughter Jane kind of played themselves as well. But
yeah, oh, that's a great movie.
What a story. on a woman in Hollywood ahead of her time and just what an incredibly sharp, tough business negotiator she was.
Oh, I've read a book about her. I will watch that documentary. She was a spectacular woman, a trailblazer indeed.
But, you know, one quick story on that, because it just obviously distracted me because the Bruins weren't on. And trying to think of the movie I did watch, but it was on, it was more a war-type espionage. But her story was a great story. I didn't know she also dated Howard Hughes, the eccentric aviation entrepreneur, gazillionaire at the time. And they had a pretty good relationship. It broke off, but they stayed like business, like just buddies. And she had a chance after losing everything, and it made me think of you mentioning galoshes tomorrow. After that hurricane that hit the New England states way, way, way back when we were, you know, our grandparent, like Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, you know, it was a pretty big hurricane. Her family lost everything because they have this home in like old Saybrook, Connecticut that she loves or loved. And she lived to be, 94, 96 years old. But after losing everything, she kind of had bombed the last couple movies after getting some Academy Awards or two in her early movies in Hollywood. She comes back home, kind of down and out. Her mother said, pick yourself up, get up. The family literally was digging out their home. Their house on the ocean got destroyed. So literally losing everything. And someone told her about this play coming out called The Philadelphia Story, which she read. She read the screenplay. She loved it. And Howard Hughes, it's in the documentary, she calls Hughes and he says, you know what? If you like it that much, borrow the money from me and buy the script, the movie rights. Buy the movie rights. Because she was going to be in the play. Because she also did, she also did play stuff. So it was what they say in hindsight, it was the smartest, most brilliant move that any actor, let alone a woman in Hollywood, and you know what that was like back then, ever has pulled off. And that was kind of the tipping point that made her like the power Katharine Hepburn. I mean, like no one messed with her after that. You'd love it. I thought of you. Any females in my life, that's a movie you want to watch. And now she paid a price for being alone. You know, she only was married once. She had her famous affairs, but no kids, never had kids. But that Golden Pond scene where she played herself almost. But what a great documentary. Watch it.
Will do.
It's very inspirational. All right. Thank you. Aaron Real, NBC News Radio national correspondent. College, expensive, get a job, get a trade. Take it away, Aaron.
Yes. So this is pretty incredible. We've been talking about this for a while. You know, if you want a degree that's going to pay dividends, you might want to look into the trades. But now the numbers are in, and we're seeing that skilled trades are appealing to Gen Z in a new way, so much so they're being called the Tool Belt Generation. Skepticism about the ROI on a college degree is real. And if you look at the numbers, the median pay for a new construction hire up 5% from last year to $48,000. Meanwhile, new hire in a professional service job, annual median, $39,000. Long story short, construction trades, those schools, students studying them up 23%. Vocational community colleges, enrollment up 16%. HVAC, vehicle maintenance, plumbing, carpentry, welding, it's all up. The kids see the writing on the wall, they see where the numbers are, and they're going in that direction.
Well, it's about time, and I'll tell you right now, get a plumbing license if you want to have a couple of homes and a vacation home. I mean, really, really. No, seriously, in New Hampshire, it's one of the best deals on earth, and you look at the money. Aaron Real, thank you.
Thank you.
Joe Guyton with the Guyton Group. I mentioned this earlier, Pease International Trade Port in Portsmouth, conveniently located back because right around the corner is April 15th, and Joe joined us last week from the Guyton Group with some great tips on tax time. Great to have you back, Joe.
Thanks, Jack. Nice to be back.
All right, here we go. Round two, April 15th tax deadline. You had some tips that were a little bit out of the box that I thought were very interesting, and we're going to have to ask you to run through some of these again because it's great information.
Thank you. Yes, last time we talked about a number of things that you can do to save on taxes and increase what you're getting to keep, including increasing retirement account contributions, and very importantly, if you own a business, take a look at adding a traditional pension plan to that 401k type plan, investing in real estate, managing your non-tax sheltered portfolio wisely, because you can create typically about a 1% tax alpha there, improve your returns. Of course, starting a business and donating to charity are also great ideas and worth looking at. Charity, you can use a donor advised fund where you can put many years' worth of donations in a current year. and then dole them out over over the next several years as you see fit.
Joe, I want to come back to the real estate question, because I hear a lot of times people, should you get some real estate properties or put it in the markets? And, you know, that's an up in the air, but there are tax advantages. But I want to come back to retirement account, that tip on retirement accounts before we move on. Can you come back on, is that, why is that such a good way to help save folks when it comes to tax money and what you pay?
Well, first of all, you know, there's a lot of information available in the marketplace about using 401k plans to reduce taxable income, save for retirement. And, of course, the benefit of starting that early in your life, because then you get the benefit of compounding of your account over time. But if you own a business, you can use safe harbor-type plans where you put in a set amount for your employees and allow yourself as a business owner, preparing for your own retirement and building your own personal balance sheet, to make relatively larger contributions. And the tax that you can save on the contributions you make can help fund the safe harbor plans for the employees. So you get a benefit that is very valuable to your team, who helps you achieve your business goals, but also get a chance to build your personal balance sheet much more quickly and free yourselves of the limitations that are in there for 401k plans. I mean, you can literally put hundreds of thousands of dollars into a traditional type pension plan for your business if you set everything up properly.
You know, it is interesting, because some of these things you talk about take a little bit of work or effort, but they really can be well worth doing and good habits. Joe, let's talk about some other strategic tax moves and some additional tips.
Well, strategic tax moves, when you say that to me, I typically think of a portfolio. If you have, an investment portfolio, and one of the things we always talk to our business owner clients about, Jack, is building your personal balance sheet outside your business so that you have assets that are readily available to you to make it easier to transition your business and also give you flexibility in your life. So if you do that and you have an investment portfolio that consists of individual stocks as opposed to mutual funds in particular, then you can manage that strategically and tax efficiently to take gains against losses, to hold stocks for an extended period of time and defer gains so that, you can create what's called tax alpha there, which adds to your overall rate of return through tax efficiency. And many people miss that strategy because, it's sort of a nuanced point that isn't readily visible.
Interesting. Well, I want to press on a couple others because we're right around the corner from April 15th. Any other ideas or thoughts?
Well, again, always important to remember about charitable contributions, because you can take a deduction now. So let's just say you're having a very good year and you're likely to have a high tax bill, and you have numerous local charities that you like to support, whatever they might happen to be. So you can take and set up what is called a donor-advised fund, and put a relatively large chunk of money into that this year and deduct it. Now, you need to talk with your accountant about that, because there are rules like there are for everything else. But you can deduct it this year, and then you might not actually give the money to the charities till next year or the year after to meet pledges. But if you have a tax problem this year that you're trying to address, it's a good opportunity to do that.
Joe Guyton, the Guyton Group over at Pease International Trade Port in Portsmouth. Any other ideas or a last tip or two here, Joe?
Always a good idea to take a look as well. It's not an income tax issue, but always a good idea to pay attention to what's going on with your estate taxes, because there are a number of provisions of the 2017 rules, the tax laws, that are going to sunset at the end of 2025, meaning beginning in 2026. And right now, most people don't spend too much time worrying about an estate tax bill, because the individual exemption is $13 million or so, $26 million for a couple. A lot of people don't exceed that, obviously. But in 2026, that's due to come back down to 5 million and then probably index for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So now's the time to be thinking about, am I going to have an estate tax issue? If I am, how do I address it? Because controlling the growth of your estate is a great way to save on taxes later on with some good planning. So it's tax avoidance and anticipation of the tax by looking at it right in advance and taking the opportunity to speak with a professional, to speak with somebody who can develop models for you to help you evaluate, do I need to make gifts right to manage my estate taxes? If I do, how much? When do I do it? How do I do it? Who keeps control of things? Considerations of that sort. For example, what we do with people is we build a model for them that takes a look at their retirement income so that we can make sure that they have enough money to meet their retirement needs before they consider giving away money, because clearly you don't want to give away money that you might need to live on.
And Joe, good. So I think all this underscores the value of working, you know, with a financial advisor or someone like the Guyton Group, correct? Because there's a lot here.
Yes, it is a, think of it, Jack, as a large jigsaw puzzle. There are a lot of pieces. They go together. They form a story when they're done. And when you build a jigsaw puzzle, you collect all the information. You put all the pieces out on the table. You build the frame first so you know what you're working within.
Yep.
And then you work on each individual area. Put it together, and a comprehensive, well-coordinated financial plan is just like that. It's tax planning, how to reduce income taxes, gifting, how do we reduce estate taxes? Do I own a business? When am I going to sell my business? How soon should I start thinking about my exit strategy? How does that affect what's going on in my life today versus in 10 years from now, and all those sorts of things? As I say, they all interact with one another and form a picture when they're done.
And we know one has the crystal ball. All right, Pease International Trade Port in Portsmouth, 766-9200, 766-9200. Joe Guyton, the Guyton Group. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Jack. Always a pleasure, and have a great day.
All right, thanks. I think I'm also supposed to mention Guardian and subsidiaries do not issue or advise with regard to mortgages or real estate. Guardian and subsidiaries, agents and employees do not provide tax, legal, or accounting advice. Consult your tax, legal, or accounting professional regarding your individual situation. Mike Cody on the New Hampshire Business Review, New Hampshire Magazine side of things, talking about some ski country good news, very end of the season. We've been seeing these patterns, another foot in the way. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning, Jack. You guys could do a promotion on, like, ski weekend package, and here it is in April. Could you believe we're talking about some of the best skiing of the year probably coming up this weekend?
Yeah, and, you know, it always comes, and what you hear from the locals, and the many years I was up there doing this, it's usually the hardcore folks, the season pass holders, the hardcore folks versus the weekend skier or boarder that benefits and enjoys this late season stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately for the resorts who are, you know, trying to eke out some profits from a very challenging season, that tends to be the case. I skied a couple weeks ago at Loon, which is where I tend to go, and it was the best snow of the year. It snowed a couple days before, and it was busy in the parking lot, but the lines in the gondola were not that bad at all. So it was great for us. We have a story in the latest issue of New Hampshire Magazine, our March-April issue, and we're so far planned out in advance that when we were talking about assignment from reporter Brian O'Connor to write about late spring skiing, will anybody care by March, April? And the title of the story is Endless Winter, and he talks about the grooming and all the work that the ski resorts do to extend the season. And, of course, it's very relevant right now. Unfortunately, some of the resorts have to close early because the conditions are so bad, particularly the ones in the southern part of the state. But, a little last bit of bonanza for everybody else.
You know, it's interesting, though, because I've seen a profound change in the North Country. Ski areas, developments, even though it wasn't a great banner ski season, good end of the season dumping. But you look at the vacation weeks where they make a lot of their money. And then I'm hearing stories that Loon's expanding, developing. Waterville Valley has a master plan I'm hearing about. I don't know any details. More villages, another hotel. The prices for a lot of these North Country ski condos, ski in, ski out homes, it used to be, when rates shot up like this, that was the that market would cool down faster than any other market. I'm still hearing and seeing prices overall higher than I expected.
Yeah, it's resilient. The prices up there are staying really high. But I think part of it, too, is people are buying homes and realizing, hey, even if there's not a lot of snow, the ski resorts have gotten so good at making snow. And so if you live in that area, you know that you can continue to do that. But yeah, because of the real estate market, it's been really tough up there if you want to find that weekend getaway that you want to buy.
Yeah. It's interesting. And, of course, I think still there's a lot of people want to get out of Dodge, if you know what I mean. They just forget why they're leaving these other states. Mike Cody, New Hampshire Business Review, New Hampshire Magazine. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Jack. Take care.
All right. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, talking about the rebuilding, the cleanup and the rebuilding of that bridge collapse in Baltimore, the bridge, the key bridge. Rory, it always amazes me because I'm not an engineer by nature or thinking.
Right.
How quickly this is probably going to happen. I thought it was going to be months, and I get a weird feeling this thing could be back up and running sooner than we know.
Well, we did hear from the salvage team that warned us. He said, you know, when we get set up and we start removing pieces, you're going to be surprised at how fast this goes. But removal of that bridge debris really is just one aspect of what's going on here. The Coast Guard did reopen a temporary alternate channel for some vessels that are involved in clearing this debris, so some traffic is getting through for this cleanup operation. But then you still have the bigger problem of removing the dolly, the ship, and, of course, rebuilding the bridge. And everyone says, how long, how long, how long? Well, that's really going to depend on what the new bridge is going to look like. Are they going to reinvent the wheel here or try to put back something that's relatively close to what was standing? That decision could really determine whether or not this bridge is replaced in 2 or 3 years or 8 or 9.
Or sooner.
Placement's going to be tough.
I've talked to, but the thing is the structure, I talked to one expert on this, and there are some local folks who know this, but a structural engineer type has done some of this, says it really depends on the columns that you don't see. In other words, how structurally sound are the underpinnings of that bridge? Because we know the cargo vessel hit it up high and snapped it in half. So what they have to build upon, it's like the foundation of a home. That's what we don't know because that's underwater. If those pieces are intact, the cranes and the size of these cranes that will come in, you already know that there's Navy vessels in there now helping with some of this. So this person was saying, I joked about this, it's not funny, but I said, I quipped on the show the other day, to build a really nice home today, even with all the subs and everything, can take upwards of a year.
Right.
And I said, I thought it'll be years. And he said, oh, no, you're talking months. This bridge will be back up. And I go, really? This is more of an engineering type than me. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just think it's going to depend on what they want to replace it. And then how much do they want to change those pilings and those pylons to prevent another disaster like this from happening, and whether or not the environmental issues get in the way. You know, Maryland crabs and that whole economy play a big part in just how much of this waterway could be disrupted.
And by the way, it's not on our talking points this morning, but one of the stories coming out of your home state of Florida is the upholding of that the abortion law there, and certainly, you know, all eyes looking on Florida as we head into a presidential election year.
Yeah, certainly does throw a wrench into the works here. What happens is the Supreme Court allowed a 15-week abortion ban to go into effect, which means another ban, which actually starts at 6 weeks, will also be allowed to take effect next month in May. So Florida will have a 6-week ban on abortions. And then in November, the court said that voters can then decide whether or not they should change the abortion laws for a much longer term, sort of where it was in Roe v. Wade days. So you're going to have abortion as a referendum and recreational marijuana. That's going to bring out a lot of unlikely voters and could stir things up, even though Donald Trump has like a 15-point lead in the state.
And a sitting governor who may not be a Trump person, but certainly has done well in DeSantis. And it tells you that abortion rights, along with many other issues, but abortion rights are going to be a key issue in just about every state, including right here. Thank you, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics Executive Director, one of our great political analysts in Austin, is joining us. A lot of names I'm hearing being floated from here to D.C. in the 2nd Congressional District, now that Ann Custer's calling it quits, Neil Levesque, and they're on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the opportunity to go for a seat that's not being occupied by an incumbent. And so there's a lot of people on both sides of the aisle. A few have, I think, announced, including Colin Van Ostrom, a nominee for governor, I believe in 2016, and there's some other state senators who are looking at it as well, including Becky Whitley, who is someone who's been sort of championing the Democratic issues in the past few years, particularly in a post-Roe versus Wade era. And some Republicans, including Bob Burns, who ran last time on the Republican side. He got about 44% of the vote, I believe. It's a tougher fight for a Republican because of the amount of – there's more Democrats who are registered in the district than Republicans. But anything can happen in politics, and the largest group, of course, is independents. So if you are a Republican and you can reach independents and get some of those votes, you might have a chance at winning.
You want to get specific on some of the names?
Well, I do know, besides Bob Burns, Andrew Valinsky is another person who's looking at it. He's a longtime attorney in Concord, very well known amongst the money people and the activist people. Potentially, there's other folks. Vikram is definitely somebody who is, I believe, taking a look at it, although I haven't talked to him directly about it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who has appeared on your show regularly. And I'm not sure who else.
Yeah, it's interesting. More Democrats are potentially lining up than I thought.
Well, a lot of the times Democrats are very disciplined in the state where they don't have primaries.
Mm-hmm.
For one reason or another, it's sort of like, you know, this person's been in that office, they're going to run again, and we're not going to primary them. On the Republican side, that seems to be less apparent. And so here you have an incumbent who's no longer running, so the chance to sort of run and not have an opponent on the Democratic side in your own primary who is got a money advantage like an incumbent would do, is not there. So it's sort of an open seat. And again, Colin Van Ostrand being one, Becky Whitley being another. And I'm sure that there's going to be other folks who come from either business or who are elected officials or people, notable people in the community that take a look at it. They have until June. So the June filing period, which, you know, we just turned April. So you've got basically 2 months to put some activism together, to put together some money. You need to have money if you're going to come out of the gate and run for Congress. And you also, I think, need to keep in mind that in this world, it's a very partisan environment, and not all Democrats think alike. And there's a lot of division on certain issues, such as the Israeli issue and other issues regarding guns, for example. And so you may have Democrats who have a lot of divergence or contrast when it comes to political issues, and Democrats will really get a choice of who they nominate.
All right. Well, what else is catching your eye? What else is interesting? One ancillary story, and I know you and I had a fun discussion animated the other day on RFK Jr.'s campaign, his whole thing and his running mate choice. But I noticed yesterday out of Washington, it looks like he's on the ballot here in New Hampshire and other states. That's according to his campaign. But they say, I don't think that's going to be an insignificant event here if this is close between Biden and Trump with independent voters, Neil.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be significant. The question is, who does Robert Kennedy take from? Does he take from Trump or does he take from Biden? And although name, I think that there's some polling that suggests that maybe he takes more from Trump. And if that's the case, you might see Donald Trump, like he did 2 weeks ago, start to whack or attack Robert Kennedy a little bit. So there's concern there. You just never really know. Just because somebody, you assume that somebody with the name Kennedy is going to take away from Joe Biden, that may not be the case. Democrats may stick with their nominee as they have in the past, despite the flaws, because they're unified in the opposition to Donald Trump.
Interesting. All right, what else is catching your eye? By the way, I don't mean to bring this up. No labels, no candidate. Still crickets. What's going on?
Well, this has been a miserable failure. Chris Christie recently said that he wasn't interested, and so they've kind of come to the end of the line. I think the fact is an independent candidate may end up getting quite a few votes, as you mentioned, but I don't know that someone who is necessarily tied to No Labels, because people don't necessarily vote for a ticket or a party. They vote for a person, and you've got to have a stunning candidate if you're going to win. So at this point in time, I don't think that we're seeing any action on the No Labels front, and it could be sort of a flop.
Interesting. That's what I'm sort of sensing. All right, Neil, what else is catching your eye?
Well, I think as we go again to that June filing period, there's always a few surprises, and it'll be interesting to see if anyone else joins the governor's race, where some of these first congressional district Republicans shore up, who's actually going to file. Sometimes people say they're going to file, and then they go around the state, and they figure out that maybe this isn't for them. And so we're all watching all of that. And, of course, what impact politics will have on this gigantic, you know, snowstorm that everyone is so fearful about in April.
Oh, you know, a nor'easter. You're going to love it, right, tomorrow? Thursday, you'll be out walking the beach?
The funny thing is, it's just a little snowstorm, but, you know, people, when there's nothing else to talk about, this is what we're talking about, right?
Well, you have Powerball, Total Eclipse on Monday. I even saw that trillions of those cicada, those little insects that are noisy when they mate, are coming our way the first time since Thomas Jefferson was president. And then, of course, Neil, yeah, but I think the wind gusts look pretty good tomorrow. I mean, whenever you see 30, 40 mile per hour wind gust and snow in April, it's a good storm.
Look, anything happening along the coast when there's, you know, 30 knot winds, that's not good. And we've already had enough damage there where it could be, there's excavators every half a mile down the seacoast of New Hampshire. So it could be trouble if there's more bad weather that affects the coast. But I think it's I saw some guy had his studded tires still on this morning at the gas station.
Yeah. You know,
I'm sure he feels pretty good.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Thank you, Neil Ovec, Institute of Politics. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Jack.